All right, y'all, it's the Nonsense and Deep Thoughts Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Nonsense and Deep Thoughts Podcast. I am Corey. Right alongside me here is Justin.
What's up, guys?
What's going on, buddy?
How are you, bro?
I am doing fantastic, man. It's been an anxious week. It's been an exciting week. This is a special episode for us. We have a very special guest tonight. This guy, he is third chair on Ladder with Crowder. That's not insulting. I swear to God, that's not insulting. It's just what it says in his bio. he has also been on This Is Not Happening on Comedy Central, and he was on season 8 of Last Comic Standing. Guys, please join me in welcoming Mr. Dave Landau.
That was a lot of effort.
That was the first time I saw that. That was pretty fucking good.
That was impressive. Man. That's more than my own show does for me.
It's fucking beautiful, isn't it? We got to make sure we get it right for you, man. We got to make sure. But yeah, that's the first time Justin saw that too. But we've been working hard all weekend, man. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day to join us. We know you're a very busy man. So, I mean, this is an awesome moment for us. We're very happy to have you here with us.
I'm happy to be on it, man.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, you did an awesome job on the show today. I just finished listening to that a little while ago. Fucking phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always fun to host. I don't take it very seriously, so it's a different kind of show.
See, and you yell at me for this.
Yeah, you and me, we've discussed this before. We're kind of like Mike and Mike. I'm more like Greenberg. He's more like Golick, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I figured Gerald's there to get the message out or whatever you want to call it. So I always kind of just throw to him when it's the more educated parts, and then I go with everything else. Like when I can do a 7+1 about, you know, sex toys, that isn't,
That one today.
That's like easy.
Crawdaddy got so nervous today, it seemed, when you gave him those. Oh my God, that was beautiful.
Oh yeah, well, I went to him for, I forgot which one it was. It was Fist or Potato Head.
Yes.
And I try to like make sure each person in the room says the thing they really don't want to say. That's why Gerald does tend to get the filthiest ones.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's always my favorite to watch him squirm a little. I love him, but it's fun to watch him ahoy to you and squirm.
Yeah, so you just got done with the Rebels with a Cause tour. How did that tour go, first off? And I really want to know, are you guys going to be putting out an album for that tour?
Not that I know of, honestly. But how it got started was I wanted to do a special in Dallas, and we were able to film it. Unfortunately, it didn't end up sticking. It just didn't work right. And it was my first attempt at doing an hour, because I've always done these other TV shows that sort of were shorter, like, you know, half hour, whatever. And I'm actually going to be re-recording this weekend at the Comedy Castle in Detroit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the place where I started and do it there. So that's what I decided to. And when I was doing that, Steven wanted to get back into stand-up. He started when he was, I want to say, like 16 or 17.
Yeah, he was young, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a kid when he started. And he did it for years and then kind of, I don't want to say retire, like took a break going into, you know, being a pundit. So he hadn't done it in a long time, and he wanted to like warm up the special and start doing it. So in the first leg of the tour, the first half of the year, he was kind of opening, and then it ended up being a co-headlining tour for the rest of it. And, you know, he was finding his legs again, which, I mean, obviously wasn't very hard considering he had been doing it for so long anyway.
Yeah.
Now, how long have you been in the stand-up game?
I started in 2004, but I started at Second City doing improv in 2001. So I've been around for like over 20 years doing comedy.
Now, is stand-up your first love? I remember listening to another podcast that you had been on, and you told them that you really enjoyed the sketch aspect of comedy. Now, is that what you truly enjoy?
Yes. Yeah, if there's anything I could do, it's make a sketch show, and that's kind of what I want to do. And that was one of the reasons I went to Louder with Crowder, was doing the sketches. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I was able to do, the candy ass, the Reese's commercial, the Bible stories, like all these different ones that I was able to put together and produce, was really what was the most fun about doing the show. So I really, really do like that.
Now, when you first started out with Louder with Crowder, how did that come about? I feel like you were just a guest when you first came on there. How did you get hooked up with Crowder, and how did that work out?
I was at the Anthony Cumia show, and I started doing his show to kind of promote us. So I was going on to that show, and Anthony said he was moving to South Carolina. And after I kind of just, it worked for whatever reason on the show. And I know Bill had to go do something else, and there's kind of a rotation there. And I was offered a job, and I said, all right, let's try this. And it was worth it. It's been very worth it. So it's been fun. It's been a really fun ride. But it was, yeah, just randomly bumped into him. I mean, it's strange because through my whole career, I ended up on like the Artie Lang and Anthony Cumia show. Then I ended up on this Anthony and Me. Now, then it was Louder with Crowder. And it's like, I was really just doing stand-up comedy and fell into all of that.
Yeah, I think that's what I enjoy the most about the Louder with Crowder show is all of the sketch work that you guys put into it. It's not just about politics. Like, I do enjoy getting the news side of it and what's going on in the world and all that, but I like the lighter side of it. And I love that side that you bring to it. Like, ever since you joined the show, there's just been a different feel to it. And it's just, it's just wonderful, man. I love listening to it every day. I'm an avid listener, and yeah, man, you just bring another aspect to it.
I just like stuff to be funny. And I know that it's like, there's a line to walk that other people on the show won't. And I like to walk, I don't know, I like to walk that line, not even on purpose, but it's, I don't know, I really just am in it for the comedy aspect and not really the news. I mean, obviously, anything is political now, you know, but
yeah,
it really is fun. And when you can really just put out a sketch or even a Photoshop that's ridiculous, whatever you can come up with that day, and see how talented people are able to like turn it around, film it, make it happen in a second, because it really is a pressure cooker. I mean, you're basically designing the show an hour before it goes live because you're trying to get in as much of the news as possible and then put that out there. And it's pretty insane. It's like, it's a very intense thing to produce every day.
That's is that about when you guys start, you get in about an hour ahead of time and go over everything real quick?
Yeah, like you look at it like 2 hours before, 3 hours before. I might have a sketch idea the night before. If it's my show, I'm like, you guys don't have to. When I host, it's like, don't worry that much. You can just kind of try to figure some stories. But yeah, when it's him, it's like the night before you're looking. Then you wake up 5 a.m. You're looking. You're trying to figure out what's going to work. And I'd say Lane and Kevin on the show are huge, huge talents that kind of dig up everything to make sure that we don't get sued or kicked off like we usually do. Then I kind of just punch it up or add, you know, dick jokes. Are we allowed to swear on here? I don't know.
You can say whatever you want. And I'm glad brought up the dick jokes, man, because I let my wife listen to some of your stand up earlier this week. Okay. And I got a lot of, oh my God, if you said that, I'd kill you. His poor wife. And there were two skits in particular that I let her listen to off of Nimble Fingers. And the one that I really want to ask you about is, are you really the penis master?
I'm really the penis master. For sure. That is a completely true story.
It really?
Yes, it is. It's 100% true. I am absolutely the penis master. And that is a very true story. I've added to that story since another story about drugging our principal. Ooh. With weed, yeah, and not on purpose. It's just he didn't want to admit it was crappy brownies, so he ate two of them, and they tasted like you were chewing weed. And then we saw the Lion King play, and it was an event. But yeah, like I spent a long time in high school, man, like 5 years, and I started. It was really. Yeah, it was really a fun time, but that story is completely true. I drew dicks everywhere for 6 months, easy. And it was the only class where I had perfect attendance. Because I kept going in early.
I wonder why. Dicks.
And I mean, hundreds of Easter egg dicks were hidden throughout the class. So even when I got suspended, she kept finding him and went nuts. And it is a true. She seriously went insane. And one day I go in, we had a new guy named Mr. Yakup. And I would throw whippets at his face. I remember that. Like, you know, those like little whippersnappers, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd wait until he was looking down, and then I'd just chuck whippersnappers, and they'd pop all around him, and he quit after like 4 weeks. I'm not proud of it, but it was funny, though. And it was just a shitty person.
So you knew at a young age you were going to be a funny man.
I thought I was going to die, man. I didn't really care, to be honest with you. I mean, people were always like, you're going to be a comic. And I was like, that's cool. I'm drunk. And it's 3 p.m. Like, I didn't have a lot of prospects, and I didn't really care until I was told about Second City by my dad. And then a teacher who actually thought I was really funny, she had me do a speech in speech class. And I did a speech called Why I Go to High School More Than Anybody, because I was going to night school at the time, trying to graduate in 4 years, which didn't work out. Perfect. But the speech got all these laughs, and I had never done that before. And the whole class was laughing. And she's like, you know, there's actually, like, this is a skill. Like, this is a writing skill that I've been trying to teach you. And that kind of made me think, like, there was a and right out of high school, I went to Second City.
So what is your writing process?
Depends on what?
Just, like, how you come up with jokes. Like, your process in building a joke.
It used to be one-liner, stuff like that, where I would just come up with stuff. I wrote one the other day, which was, I put it on stage like a couple weeks, where I wanted it to all be very real, but every now and then you just want to throw stuff out there to mix it up with the audience. Mm-hmm. So this one was, I was watching the History Channel, and there's a show about sperm whales, and the women hold the sperm for like 10 years at a time, and then will periodically just get themselves pregnant with it. And I told my buddy, and he said, yeah, I had a girl do that. I had a girl who saved a condom after we had sex and then called him out of the blue and said that she was going to use it to impregnate herself. And I said, well, what did you say? He said, well, I guess you can do whatever you want now that you're 18.
Oh, no. But, oh, shit.
But know that whatever you choose to do, your mother and I will be proud of you. So
Jesus
Christ. It's fun, right? So it's like every now and then I'll throw that in there, but most of my comedy over time just becomes, don't oof me. That's hilarious.
It is.
But over time, comedy just becomes that thing where you find your own voice, and you find your own story, and you find your own personal story. And everything that I talk about is something that happened to me, or what happened then that I can relate to now. Stories about being bullied, what it's like for my kid to go to school, stories of alcoholism, stories of arrest, stories of, you know, various things of what happens where you just find your voice. And finding your voice is just wanting to tell your own story. So now my process is a bit different. Like when I go into sketch writing, like I just wrote a sketch, I don't know if it will do it, hopefully, but it was like a Phil Spector Christmas. And even though he's dead, it's his hologram, but he still recorded it in prison. Just like rant. I like to see how far I can take anything. It was like the same as the, and I guess I referenced the candy ass sketch because I just thought it was such a funny idea that Candyman had come out as a remake. And this guy who was clearly in the closet at CNN would just, you know, haunt your mirror and try to have sex with you if you said his name three times. So it's I
love that one.
Thank you, man.
That was a good one. What is we got here? Bill Navoa says, to write jokes, do you feel as if there's a certain space when ideas populate in your mind more than others during activities such as driving? Or do you like need to sit and focus on it?
No, I think he's absolutely right. It'll be like in the shower, driving, doing something else. That's really raking leaves, anything is when I find that comes in, because your mind's kind of free to think and stuff will just pop in there. And there's also moments, I don't think you should force it. There's moments where you just start getting ideas, and a lot of people don't take advantage of those moments. They squander it. And that's when I immediately grab a notepad and I just start writing it down. And like, a lot of it's going to be crap. A lot of it is or isn't, but it's important to do that. It's also important to like journal, which if you've been in therapy, like I am, you have to do that like once a day. And just being able to write without thinking, just because your subconscious is going to speak to you just through your pen. And doing that, you can kind of look at it and break it down to like what your own feelings are and what you're going through. And that's how you kind of relate to people and find the real you.
Right. I was talking to Bill there in chat about this the other day, actually, about how a lot of my ideas for the podcast happen to come while I'm driving. And sometimes I forget that I have this little thing called a voice recorder on my cell phone. Yeah. And I forget to do that while I'm going, and I forget to write it down. And then later I'm left wondering what the fuck my idea was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember hearing Steven Crowder talk about that on an episode last week, I think, about how he does his thinking in the car and stuff too. And I was like, wow, man, I could really relate to that. So yeah,
it's because the distraction is letting your subconscious come out, and that's really where your humor is. And when you're distracted, you're not. Because sitting down, I've tried to do it for years. I can do it with movie scripts, or if I'm working on like a story, something, it's different, or like a sketch. But when a stand-up is so, once you find your voice, there's something so pure about it being inside of your head and where it is, that it just kind of has to find its way to you.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you're currently in therapy and that you have to journal every day for that. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that about you, man. I listened to a lot of different podcast episodes where you're featured on it, and you have zero issue in talking about your past and your struggles with addiction and depression and anxiety and all that. But I also remember you saying that when you're on stage and when you're performing, the anxiety doesn't really bother you. I almost have the opposite reaction, where leading up to even before tonight, every episode that I go on, I get this anxiety, this overwhelming anxiety before I hit that go live button. Is there something that you do where you can kind of prepare for what you're about to do to try to wash that away and get into the right mindset? Or is it just something you've overcome with time and confidence?
I just snort benzos. You know, it's odd because like anybody else, when you first start, you are terrified. Mm. But eventually it just becomes something that it was what I wanted to do. Like once I started doing stand-up, I felt something that I had never felt before. So the more I did it, the more comfortable I got. And no matter how bad your day is, no matter what you're going through, there's like what I've always liked about, where I can put in addiction. Addiction was escape from pain for me. That's all it's ever been. And whenever I look at it through therapy, I just don't want to be alive in this moment as this person. So if I'm on stage for 45 minutes, that's me being like in a place where I just have to do that. I only have to focus on that. And that's fun for me because it's actually very, very freeing to be in that position. So for me, it takes away the angst and it takes away a lot of the depression because I have a goal. I'm in the middle of it. I don't need to pay attention to anything else except for what I'm doing in that moment. And it's very hard to live in the moment, and stand up allows you to do that. And that's something that I think is why I connected with it so much. I mean, even with improv or sketch, you still have to worry about other people on the stage. If you're doing a radio show, you have to worry about other people also on the stage. So it's sort of very freeing when it comes to that with stand up and with radio shows and everything. I kind of just talk, hope it works out. I mean, same as when I go on to Crowder, I want to make sure that it's a good show, but I also want to make sure other people look good. I think that's something that a lot of podcasters don't understand. I mean, you have a lot of haters, and especially have somebody, for example, who will be like, "Why don't you get why Joe Rogan's popular?" It's like, you don't. He listens. That's what he does. He listens, and he replies, and that's really what it takes to be a great host. I mean, if you look back to Carson, everybody in the room looked good. I mean, it might be an old thing, but he knew how to make everybody look good. And that's something that you just don't see as much anymore. People are too involved in me, me, me to realize that a group of people and everybody in the room doing well is far more important.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And since you mentioned Rogan, I just wanted to bring up an episode that I heard recently. We were talking about this before the show. We're always trying to come up with ideas to better our show. And I keep telling myself, man, you gotta reach out and you gotta research and come up with these crazy things to talk about, like Joe Rogan does. But then he comes out with something like today, and that I listened to earlier today, and it was talking about how the U.S. military was involved in a project where they were trying to create gay bombs. and these fart bombs back whenever the hell they were trying to do it. And I just thought to myself, where the fuck do you even come up with this? How do you look that up? How do you find material like this? It's just like, and it's not something he brought up. It's just off the top of his head, man.
Is the fart bomb like it causes people to do that?
No, so it was.
No, it's like a big stink bomb.
Yeah, it's like a big the gay bomb, though.
It makes you gay.
Yes, it was. I kid you not. What was apparently supposed to make the other army just want to have sex with each other, and that's all they wanted to do. Yeah,
it's supposed to make them irresistible to one another, and in that mass confusion, gives the American soldiers time to attack.
Did they ever test it on American soldiers, like the Navy? I'm joking, Navy. I appreciate the service. The village people ruined it for you. But who did they test it at?
That's what I want to know. I need to know how I can research this.
What if that's not good, though? What if you get into their territory and they're stronger?
They're just fucking coming at you with raging boners, right? Oh, I'd be more afraid of that army than any other army.
Well, yeah. I didn't know that they had a gay bomb. I'm sure they've tried a lot of stuff, though. I mean, they thought LSD would be truth serum.
Yeah.
And it's not. I did tons of it. I mean, it's you believe, I guess, that it's there, but I don't know. There's nothing that I've ever seen that they say this is what it was designed for.
He's got so much information in his head. Like, I don't know where he comes up with it. I wouldn't know how to research this stuff, man. Like, I want to know, did they test it?
Think it's an odd thing for everybody to come up with and think that's the best strategy. They're like, you think we should blow everybody up and kill everyone? And I just blow each other. It'll be fine. And then we can see. What do you win? I mean, what's the end game of making everyone? Man. Oh, it's fun. Yeah, there's so much stuff that's gone on. I don't trust anything, so I'm sure they did do that.
Yeah. I think the government's got a lot more shit going on than we realize.
Oh, of course they do. But the problem is the government's ran by people, so it'll never be effective.
Yeah, and then the government's controlled by the people with the most money, and you know, it's just fucking never-ending cycle.
Yeah, it's impossible to. I mean, we'd love to think that, you know, we're a people in charge of the government.
That's a good joke.
Nope. Yeah, we think it, but no.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the other things I wanted to ask you about dealing with depression and anxiety and all that is, is it difficult to turn that into your material? And work it into your jokes and stuff, because you seem pretty comfortable about talking about all that and turning it into good content.
For a long time it was. I mean, I didn't know where to go with it or how to relate it to an audience. I remember the first time I was even trying to talk about some things that I had done as a kid and stuff that I didn't know if it would relate. And it started being the thing that people related to. And people have come up to me and said, you said this on a show or this in your act and it helped me get sober and it saved me. And I'm like, really? Me masturbating in my kitchen until I passed out and caused a house fire? But I have these things. Yeah, it's really I never make a grilled cheese with one piece of bread and the plastic still on the Kraft single and then masturbate because you're waiting for the 90 minutes for it to cook.
Terrible.
Oh, yeah. It was, I've done amazing things. The fact that I'm not in prison is shocking. I think it's only because I bordered Detroit and by anything you could do was slightly less worse than anything else actually going on. But it was hard at first. I remember the first time I ever did it was in 2008. And my friend said, you should just go up on stage and tell a real story. And it was a true story. And I've said it on stage, so it's not to do the bit, but it was my brother was very drunk at a party. And I picked him up and I brought him down to a White Castle. And he was hammered drunk, and it was on 8 and Gratiot in Detroit. It was like the east side. And we ordered a Crave case. And as we're pulling out, my brother saw a prostitute. So he just started hucking cheeseburgers at her. And he's just hanging out the window, just like, how much for a hand job, bitch? Pap. And just like chucking them at her. And I say, if you could, then she pulled out her badge. And it was an undercover cop. And, you know, the punchline is if you could have seen the look on my dad's face when the prosecuting attorney said, would you blow us both for extra cheese? And what happened was we were arrested in real life. We were arrested for that. My friend was also in the car. He was arrested. I ended up getting off because I was not drunk. But my brother was still charged with solicitation of sex. And so so we ended up having to go to court for it. And this is in the Coleman A. Young Hall of Justice in Detroit. So as nice as I can say this, you have a Def Jam crowd. And they started reading off everything my brother had said to this undercover prostitute while he was throwing cheeseburgers at her. Like, I'll show French fries in your ass. This, and you know, just one after the other. And the whole place started, everyone was laughing except the female cop. And yeah, that was like the first time I went up and I just told the story like as I remembered it, and it killed. But it came off as something that was just very honest, something that I would tell at a party, whatever it was, and it just worked. And that was one of the first times I thought, well, this was a really dark moment for me. Like, I really remembered it as a very bad, bad day and sad thing. But the way that I was able to word it and get a laugh off of it, I felt that a time had passed to forgive myself. And I think that forgiveness allows me to discuss the things that I talk about now, because I don't have any shame in the fact that I have depression and I have suicidal thoughts and I have all that. That's just part of my life. I can't really help it, but I try to be positive. But I also, I'm very cynical. I mean, that's obvious on the show, but yeah. And I also don't have a trust. I don't have a trust in authority. I never have.
That's understandable.
Well, I've talked about it on my show. I mean, the government killed my dad with Agent Orange, and then they were like, we didn't do that. And then they admitted to it and were like, we're still going to give you nothing. It was just sort of, I got very depressed at a young age, and then I got extra depressed, you know, when my dad died and other things happened. And I'm happy to talk about it because people go through hell every day, far worse than I've ever been through.
Yeah.
So I don't mind sharing it.
Yeah, and even if you don't think that it's telling your story or making light of some of it, even if you don't think that that's really going to help anybody, you're not really keeping that at the forefront of your mind. You never really know what someone's going to think of it or how they're going to take it or what it's going to make them reflect on or some shit like that. So, I mean, that's great. I love that, man.
Right. Yeah, the platform you have. You can reach so many people, and you don't even realize it because you're making them laugh at the same time. But then it sits with them.
Yeah, and you have kind of no comprehension of it. Yeah, I'll be in an airport, and people will be like, "Oh, hey, I saw you. I like you, and this and that." It's very crazy, you know, that you can have that effect on people. And I'm not even trying to. That's the thing is, I almost hate the fake. Who's that big guy who just the motivational speakers, the same 8,000 books you can buy, and I'm not talking about Jordan Peterson, that's very relevant, but there's so many books you can buy that it's just like, you know, man the fuck up or whatever they'll call it, and you look at these books and it's all the similar message of like, you know, just try, just go for your goals. That's the same thing it says.
It's all the cliches. Try.
Yeah, and it's just jammed into a book. And I used to read self-help, and I'm like, I'm reading the same thing over and over again that it didn't make any sense to me. But then I started reading books by addicts, and I started reading books by even like rock stars, or I started reading books by like even like Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Talk to People, you know, and influence people. There's books out there that are actually very, very good to help your mental health. They're just not the ones that are being jammed down your throat like they have all the answers.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, man. So with your stand up, does it feel like it's getting more difficult nowadays with the way political correctness is coming out and people are getting, you know, very, very edgy and picky and angry about the choice of words you have and shit? Does that make it difficult to be a comic?
I haven't noticed.
Fucking good.
No, I'm kidding.
Damn it.
I wish. I don't care, I guess, is the difference. But you will be surprised what people get upset about. I mean, I had one joke I was doing in Detroit, and this is when I first started noticing things turning. And it was a joke just about how 9/11 couldn't happen in Detroit. And it's all it was about. Nothing. It wasn't about making fun of anybody. It was just a discussion about the difference in geography, really. And this woman stood up and stormed out crying. Made this huge scene, so then I had to dig myself out of that hole. And then she came up to me screaming at me. And I realized, like, she's crazy. I don't. And somebody goes, she is. She doesn't know anyone who died in 9/11. She's just pretending her cousin is, and she's trying to be upset for no reason. So she goes, my cousin died 9/11. And I go, really? Which plane did he hijack? And then she started basically.
Holy shit.
And it's when I noticed, like, okay, there's sort of people being rewarded for this fake victimhood. And I don't think that makes sense. Like, I think that's the issue too with mental health, is I see a lot of that where there's mental health. A lot of people have it. I think most people deal with some degree of it. But then I also think there's people that exploit it and try to turn it into their act way too prematurely, or discuss it, or make it, I'm a victim and I have to deal with, this is what I was diagnosed with. And it's fucking boring, if you want me to tell you the truth.
And God forbid you call it out too.
Yeah. And you have to have the stories behind it. You have to have proof. I mean, not saying proof, but it's like, you should know what you're talking about before you just decide, well, this is my thing. It's OCD self-diagnosed. I'm going to go talk about it on, you know, there's this reward system now for having flaws, but then nobody is forgiving in our society. It makes absolutely no sense. Like, we're supposed to admit everything that's wrong with us, but the second you do something wrong, they want you buried. I don't understand any of this stuff. Like, the whole way that everything is working is just this wheel of hypocrisy that I can't grasp.
Yeah, the victim culture nowadays is crazy. It's almost greater than the cancel culture. And the worst part is the people who are trying to be victims for other people. When someone's offended for someone else, that part just gets me. I don't understand that.
If you're on the side of a mob, you need to stop and look at what you're doing and go, okay, well, what am I like? Because you're just following something. And if you're part of that, like you said, is, you know, when you are jumping in for somebody else, especially online, you have no stake in the game. There's no way you actually care. You're just being a part of something to pile on and destroy somebody. And I've watched it happen time and time again. Like, I was very happy. I mean, you're saying Rogan, Shane Gillis used to be on a network I was on, and he got SNL, and that whole thing went down where he was being called racist by everybody on the planet because he made one joke that was actually making fun of billionaires dismantling Chinatown. But then they were able to take it out of context, find one word, get him taken off of SNL. And I watched this all happen to a guy I was working with, and it was horrifying. And now I'm happy that he's come back so far that it's like the ultimate F you, but it's beautiful. And I couldn't be happier for him, but it was watching that happen and watching so many people jump on the side, people who should have been his friends, jumping on the side of not even defending him to what, virtue signal and get likes.
That's a big part of it, man. The social media part. And did you see the story about the kid who was being offered a scholarship to the University of Florida to play football?
No.
And they took that away. They took away their offer for a scholarship to this kid because he posted a video singing along to a rap song, and he happened to sing along with the N-word.
And he was white, I assume, or Hispanic?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Okay. So he sang along to this song. And Florida took away their offer, their scholarship offer to him. And all he did was come out and say, oh, you know, I their decision, I'll abide by it. It's fine. I apologize for my actions. I know it was hurtful. Dude, you sang a song.
Yeah. The problem is like, you shouldn't do that knowing what the climate is now. But then I would be lying through my teeth if I said I never rapped along to a song to that. Like, that's my problem is, again, with the hypocrisy. It's like, can you believe they did that? It's like, yeah, I can. You did it. Stop.
Yes.
It.
Yes. Yep. Shouting from the mountaintop, shouting people down when you know damn well they're doing the same damn thing.
Yeah, dude, being relentlessly unforgiving is not a virtue. Trying to destroy somebody else because their success is not a virtue. It's just, it's pathetic. And it's something that, I mean, who knows if it's going to stop? I can't figure, the idea that we gave everybody a phone and everybody an opinion. And I understand people say freedom of speech, but I don't think everybody should be able to publicly say a lot of things just because they're dipshits. And I get that's my opinion. Social media has destroyed the country. It's destroyed the world.
Yeah, I
totally agree.
I always say it gives people a voice to say something, like come at you, but there's no repercussions. When we were kids growing up, if you went to somebody and said the wrong thing, you'd get popped in the mouth. It would just happen.
And when you,
you learn to tone back, some of us.
Yeah. No, and I had too. I mean, it's like I have scars. It's just a matter of you used to fight, you used to stand up for yourself. You used to be able to do it in a way where, yes, there were repercussions. And when you're young, I don't know what happens now because everything's being recorded. But if you said something to the wrong person, they would beat the shit out of you and you didn't go to court. That was the end of the day. You lost the fight and you moved on.
Yep.
That's all it was. And now we have all these people who can hide behind fake accounts. They can do everything else. And like, I realize, you know, there's certainly some tactful trolls out there that have made me laugh, but it's a matter of people who are really trying to brutalize you by jumping onto an entire thing of canceling someone. And then I have to hear cancel culture doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Really? Yep. So why are we taking away everything from people? Like for the last 2 years, if you want an idea of social media works or not, we live in America and we were locked down wearing masks indoors, arguing with our family, and somebody just mentioned you had a Christmas tree there. When was the last time it felt like Christmas?
It's been 2019.
Yeah.
Long ass time ago.
No, because you still have your aunt at dinner who's wearing a mask, who's terrified, and you still have people that won't come. And it's like, are we still worried you're going to get sick in your life? It's going to happen.
Yeah, my wife and I talked about this when COVID was going on. We lost her mom the year before COVID hit. It was her last Christmas with us.
Did they market COVID?
Not at that point, but it was close enough. I'm surprised they didn't, man. If it was a few months later, they would have.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
I appreciate that. But it was a few days after Christmas. And we said, like, she was supposed to have more time. So if it came up to the next year when we were in COVID, in the heat of COVID, man, and they told us that we couldn't get together for Christmas and we did not have that last Christmas with her, all hell would have broke loose, man. Like, that's awful that you're missing these holidays with these people over something that you're seeing shit come out now. You know, they lied about a lot of it.
Well, that's the crazy part, is when you have actual companies that had to go into hearings and say, well, we never actually tested the vaccine on anybody with COVID. And then you go look and you tell people and they say, well, you know, you're just a Trump thumper. And I'm like, no, I didn't even really like him. Just liked him a lot more than Hillary. Like I didn't hate him either. I mean, once he was the president, I was like, I think he's doing a decent job. Like, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Like, but you can't have an opinion now with somebody polarizing you and telling you every opinion that you have. And I'm a germaphobe. For real. Like, my mom was a bipolar nurse, and she wasn't one that got help. And so it was very, like, wash your hands, everything's dirty, everything's germy, everything's, you know. And when just COVID hit, like, people were shocked that I was still going on planes. I was still flying. Like, I was just, it was great because I was, like, one of four people on a plane and always getting bumped to first class because everybody else is terrified. But I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, where are you gonna hide from something like this? You can't lock yourself in your house and just weaken your immune system for a year. And none of it made sense to me by everything that had been pushed into my brain by somebody who actually understood germs and medicine. And so far, no COVID.
Yeah, really? You haven't had it once?
No.
That's amazing.
And if I did, I didn't feel it.
Yeah. Right. That's how it was with a lot of people. But man, your episode of Ladder with Crowder that you guys did, where you had that mortician on from the UK, that I think everybody needs to listen to that, man. I've been trying to get people to listen to that episode that would not normally listen to your show. You know, people from the other side.
There's a lot of people that won't. I get that.
Yeah.
I don't watch it.
That's all right. Justin doesn't watch ours. See, I try to watch ours.
Another thing you yell at me for.
Yeah. I mean, hey, man, I like to critique my own work. What can I say?
I get it. No, I
hate the sound of my voice.
But that, I do think that is one of those episodes that is important, because you're going, do a lot of 17-year-old football players normally get heart attacks?
Right.
Yeah, I also just saw that comment. I do like when people are driving alone with a mask. I don't know how more afraid you can be of life. Mm-hmm. It's like you're just, that's going to be your biggest regret. You're just going to go, I did nothing because I was afraid I was going to die as you're dying.
So another thing that a lot of people don't really understand is you're the most moderate voice on that show, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that you're as far into the conservative side as Crowder and the others, but you are the moderate voice. And that'll bring me back to the comedy skits, too, or the comedy tour that you do. When you go on these tours, do you get audience members or reviews from people that are pissed off expecting, a more conservative show, and then they get the raw Dave Landau?
I've gotten like maybe one, but then most people will come up to me and say, I just saw another comic who was political, for example. And they're like, look, I agree with your politics, but I came to a comedy show. So I think they want to see that other side of it. I did have one person who was like, well, there were just a lot of jokes about your life and not that much about the president. And it's like, well, I did do 5 straight minutes on it anyway, but I'm sorry it wasn't enough for you. You can stay at home and write your own shit, not bother me. I sort of just like it. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could get that occasionally, but for the most part, I've seen some really positive reviews. And I mean, you're always going to get people that are negative. So it took me years to deal with that, but eventually you just have to say, like, well, it's people that hate me, and that's that, and you move on, and, you know, sometimes they rear their heads, and then sometimes new people hate you for whole new reasons you didn't even know could happen.
You got to just let it slide off you like it's on a shit slip and slide, right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it sucks, but everybody gets it to some degree. I mean, I've had so many death threats, I can't even begin to count, but I'm not worried about that. People who threaten to kill you online aren't going to kill you. The guy who kills you doesn't tell you about it 2 days before. It's a surprise. Yeah. That's the guy you should be afraid of.
For sure.
Yeah, not the one that's like, I'm going to be there at your show. You're like, all right, be there, because I know you're not coming. You're a pussy. But the guy who just shows up and doesn't tell you, that's who you look for. You know, that's why people say, too, you know, they got a little bit mad with Steven because, you know, they searched for guns before some shows with concealed carry and all that.
Really?
But you have to understand that we don't want to get shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, I've seen a lot of people comment on that for him wearing his holsters on the show.
Yes.
Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I'm not a crazy gun guy. I have a gun. But I never shot one until I was in my 30s.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when I was young, rifles, whatever, you know, when you're at your cousin's ranch and, you know, that's all they do is shoot stuff and ride four-wheelers. But, like, an actual, like, real handgun, I never even touched while I was in my 30s.
Yeah. All right. So, man, I know you got to get going. I know it's a short night tonight. But, hey, I appreciate you spending some time with us. Why don't you tell everybody about your upcoming shows? I know we got some coming up here shortly. You've got one up in Syracuse coming up, right?
I do, yeah. I'm going to be at the Syracuse Funny Bone. It's in the mall. So I'm going to brag there. At the Funny Bone. And also this weekend, I'll be at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan, which will be, I'm going to be recording my special, A Prison 10, where I'm kind of putting together an entire special of like all my arrests and combining it into one thing. Then I can just kind of move on to writing like a new themed show. But this one, awesome. and then I'm kind of putting out a book that I've been working on for years. And yeah, I've been wanting to put it out for a couple of years, but my literary agent held on to it for way too long. And now I'm going back and finishing it, and I'm just going to self-publish because I don't care.
Perfect. That's the way to do it anymore, man. Like with this day and age, the possibilities are endless with doing shit yourself, being independent. So that's awesome, man. I can't wait for that.
When I just saw a question, any specials? Yeah, taping this weekend. I absolutely would come to Australia, and I've been to Scranton, PA, but not in a while.
Well, Scranton, PA would be a good one, man.
You need to get here.
Yeah, I'd go there.
Yeah, we've got
experience on tour. Sorry, I'm reading your stuff.
Go for it, man. Worst experience on tour. If you want to give us that before we head out, because I know you got to get going.
There's so many. I don't know where to start. I mean, everything that's ever happened that could possibly happen on the road has happened to me. I will say the first time I ever went up, because it was an interesting thing with that girl that got a can thrown at her. Mm. The first night I ever hosted a show, I was in a sports bar during the World Series. And the guys, this is like, we're going to shut off the TV and then just start the comedy show. And I'm like, that sounds like a terrible idea. I'm like 20.
Yeah.
And you start shutting off the TVs and they're already booing. And I was like, okay. So I was up on stage to everyone booing. And I said, hey, everybody, how are you? And then a bottle winged by my head and shattered behind me. And I said, all right, good night, everybody. And I walked off stage. And the guy's paying me. He goes, I had no idea that would happen. And I'm like, yeah, I only told you 40 times that I think that could happen. But there's so many things that have happened on tour. I think I've blacked a lot of it out.
Yeah.
Like, it's all, just you name it, I've had to deal with it.
Yeah. Dude, yeah. You seem like you've had a busy life, man. And you seem like you're constantly busy. I can't imagine hopping on a plane almost every day to go here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's a work, but it's, you know, it's not a coal mining job. I'm very, very happy for what I do. Like, when people are like, oh, it's good you fight the good fight, I'm like, I'm in a comfortable chair for an hour and a half, but I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, man, I just want to say thank you again for taking the time to hang out with us. I do appreciate that. And tell your wife and family that we appreciate you, or appreciate them giving us your time, too.
Yes, because I know. Tell your wife I'm sorry about some of the jokes.
She loves it anyway.
Don't apologize to her, Dave.
I know.
Don't apologize to her.
She loves you. You're good, man. But I appreciate it, man. Hopefully, we could do this again sometime. That would be.
I would love to, man. That would be great.
This was.
We can get into more shit. I would really appreciate that.
For sure, dude.
Yeah, I need to hear the werewolf story. That's what I need.
Listen, that whole skit with the werewolf and all that is one of the best written sketches I've ever listened to. The culmination, I fucking love that. That's my favorite one that you've done, man.
Thank you. And that's a very, very true story. The only part that isn't is the beginning of how I actually ended up there. It's two prongers where the first time that was about me bonging a fifth. That did happen and everything. But the other part was I ended up getting into a fight with authorities, and then my parents had me committed. And then after that, I ended up going to rehab. And when I first told that story, I wanted to kind of not, I didn't know how to say that. Like, how do you talk about fighting your dad who's dying of cancer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, and then he won, though. He's a non-vet and I was a drunk teenager. So it was more like I tried to fight him and then my head hit a microwave.
Ooh.
But... And he's a very good man, not violent. Just
getting his place, I guess, right?
Yeah, and after a few weeks in the mental hospital, they determined that I was just an alcoholic. But of course, it was after I was attacked by a wolf boy, and we would sit in...
leaving a mushroom print penis.
Dude, it is the worst, man. He kept howling at night, and they kept complaining about it, and they didn't even care. Like, yeah, there's wolf boys. What are you going to do? Now it's an amazing thing. I think there's a whole group, and
Did the should we let him finish actually happen?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because it was also co-ed, but they would put you in a room with, you know, who your same sex was. Yeah. But then, I mean, unless you were real crazy, then there were rooms that were for, you know, extra special people. I remember one girl, her dad had touched her, stepdad, and she sharpened an ice cream scoop. And when he was passed out drunk, she took his eye out with it. I'll never forget that.
Holy shit.
And during the like circle meeting, I was like, oh, that's awesome. And they're like, don't encourage that. And I was like, no, but that's the coolest. I'm like, good for you. Really, way to take it back. Like, yeah. I even then, and they're like, dude, we can't encourage violence. I was like, why? That's great.
Yeah, but in that situation, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and they didn't want to put her in any sort of a jail. So they put her in an institution to get help. And I hope it did, because I remember she's 13. And I remember just, I was young then too. Yeah. But it just, I remember her being really young, and it was to protect her little sister. I'll never forget that. And I enjoyed talking to her and other people, but instead I got roomed with a guy who barked. And, wolves don't even bark. He did.
Yeah, dude, I died at that, dude. Going for the lamp and it being glued down, that's just that happened.
Yeah, I forgot that they did that, because they didn't want you to hit people with a lamp. It turns out sometimes you need to.
Go figure. All right. Thanks a lot, Dave. Oh, I really appreciate it. We're happy that you were on with us. And
appreciate it.
Have fun tomorrow, man.
Thank you. I thank you for the support, guys. And thank you very much. I'm sorry it took me a minute to get on here, but I'm glad you had me.
Yo, not a worry, man.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Be good.
Later. Have a good one.
All right, y'all. It's the Nonsense and Deep Thoughts Podcast.